You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
David Seymour's end-of-life bill passed its first reading in Parliament last night by 76 votes to 44. The bill allows those with terminal illnesses to end their life with the help of a doctor. The bill will now go to the select committee stage where the public can make submissions before being voted on a second and third time by Parliament. I first spoke with David Seymour about the bill, asking him how he was feeling after it passed the first vote.
Oh, look, I feel cautiously optimistic that we will have a very good public submission process through the select committee, and that will encourage members of Parliament to keep voting for the end-of-life choice bill on its second and third readings. It has to be voted on three times in total, so that we can finally deliver choice for those New Zealanders who are suffering at the end of their life, can't be helped in any other way, and just want to be able to make a choice under the protection of the law.
And do you feel that it'll be a closer vote, the second and third votes, after the select committee stage?
Potentially. I mean, there's some people that have indicated that, you know, they're going to vote for it on first reading, but they're uncertain about second or third. But, you know, that's what a campaign is about. It's about persuading members of Parliament that actually this is something that New Zealanders want. These laws can be designed safely and have been in many other jurisdictions now, and that you know, they should continue to lend their support to it.
And why do you feel it's so important that people with terminal illnesses have the choice to end their life?
Oh, it's just what a sane country in 2017 needs to do. I mean, you look at the state of our current laws, and the choices that some people face are just absolutely cruel. People are able to take their own life, and we know from extensive research of coronial records that over 5% of suicides in New Zealand are by people who don't want to die, who are not depressed, are not suicidal, but they have a terminal illness, and they know that if they don't take control now, then they're going to suffer interminably. They often take their lives earlier than they would have liked to have because the current law requires them to do it without assistance. We know that people can refuse treatment, they can refuse food and water, they can literally starve themselves to death. Some people do that, and they do it without any safeguards, no accountability structure or mechanism whatsoever. That's a cruel choice. We know that doctors often apply painkillers knowing that it will end the patient's life, and that's somehow okay with no safeguards, checks or balances whatsoever. What we disallow in New Zealand is for people to make a choice under the rule of law with proper safeguards and checks and balances to say, I need to take control of this situation. I don't want to die, but I know I'm going to, and I want to die well, surrounded by friends and loved ones at a time of my choosing, not writhing in agony, you know, unable to be helped in any other way. Now, people should have that choice. It's just what a sensible society would do, and what many societies are doing now. You know, this is not a new thing. When New Zealand Parliament first debated in 1995 Michael Laws's Death with Dignity Bill, there were no other countries with an assisted dying law. Since then, we've had eight states of the American states. We've had the entire country of Canada, we've had Belgium, we've had the Netherlands, and we now have our cousins across the ditch in Victoria, all of whom have given that choice. 110 million people around the world now live in a jurisdiction where it's legal to have choice at the end of your life, and I think it's about time that 5 million New Zealanders joined that group.
Speaking of safeguards, some people feel there aren't enough safeguards in the bill. What are these, and do you feel they might change after the select committee process?
Well, there's a few questions there. So first of all, yes, the point of the select committee process is to improve bills, and I think the bill that I've drafted is pretty good, but I think it's very possible that we'll come up with some changes through the select committee process that will make it better and make people happier to support it. Some people say that there's not enough safeguards, but they're typically people who are opposed to the bill for other reasons and tend to try and find, you know, frankly, excuses to oppose it. For people who are genuinely curious, and I respect there are people who are genuinely curious and concerned about does this bill have sufficient safeguards? Well, the first thing I'd say is that this bill, unlike the previous two bills considered by New Zealand Parliament, has been given the tick of approval by the Attorney-General, in comparison with the Bill of Rights Act. So that's something that happens for every bill. The Attorney General checks that the bill preserves people's human rights, and this bill achieved that. What are those safeguards? Well, there's a long series, but first of all, you've got to be 18 or over. You have to be a New Zealand citizen or permanent resident. You have to have either a terminal illness that will end your life within 6 months or a grievous, irremediable medical condition. You must be in an advanced state of irreversible decline in capability. That means that you're getting worse, you've been getting worse for a long time, and you're not going to get any better. All of that must be checked by two doctors. They must check that you are of sound mind, that you understand the nature of the decision that you're making. They have to talk to relatives and other medical practitioners to satisfy themselves that there's no coercion at play. All of that must be countersigned by the registrar on behalf of the Ministry of Health, and then all of the details are recorded and reported to Parliament. So this is a very rigorous set of checks and balances, and I have people on the other side of the argument actually telling me that I've made it too bureaucratic and too difficult to access. That suggests that maybe the balance is about right.
I then spoke with Renee Joubert from Euthanasia Free New Zealand about why she is opposed to the bill, first asking her what her main opposition to assisted dying is.
The main opposition would be that it's intentional death by lethal drugs, and a law change would make it legal for one person to be involved in bringing about the death of another person. So that's a fundamental shift to in our criminal law.
The first reading of the bill passed last night by some margin. How do you feel about this?
Well, we are disappointed. We do know, though, that several MPs only voted for it to have a discussion for the bill to go to Select Committee, but they do have grave reservations about the bill. We would expect them to change their minds eventually.
So do you feel that during the later readings, after it's gone through the Select Committee stage, it'll be a much tighter vote?
Absolutely, yeah. There are several flaws to this bill that I would be very surprised if it would get voted through.
And New Zealand First has pledged their support for the bill only if there's a binding referendum. Do you think there's a lot of public support for assisted dying?
Well, interesting that you ask. We've just done a poll asking people what they understand by the term assisted dying, and we found the vast majority confuse it with things that are already legal, such as turning off life support, do not resuscitate, stopping medical treatment, you know, things that people are already allowed to do under the current law. So we don't believe any poll using the words assisted dying or some of the euphemisms should be taken as support for a law change.
And the end-of-life bill provides restrictions such as having to have the consent of at least two doctors, having a terminal illness that will likely end your life within 6 months, or a grievous, untreatable medical condition. Do you think these don't go far enough?
I think they go too far, especially the second clause, irremediable condition can include things like disabilities, long-standing aging-related conditions, mental illness. The list goes on.
Because, I mean, people feel that if someone is of sound mind and are in a lot of pain, they should be able to make that decision. And, I mean, some take the decision anyway. Wouldn't it be better that they do it with a doctor and it's ended in a humane way rather than them taking matters into their own hands?
Well, that is based on the assumption that there are only two alternatives. Either we change the law and legalise euthanasia and assisted suicide by doctors, or we leave people to suffer. And that's actually not the case. It's possible to address suffering without changing the law, without ending the life of the person. And that's really what we stand for. Most of the time when people want an earlier death, it's because emotional, psychological, existential reasons cause them to feel that their physical condition is unbearable. So when they get holistic care and social their social emotional needs are addressed as well, they very often change their minds. So that's really where we're up to. We are not saying people should be left to suffer. We are saying people's real needs should be addressed. And then, when they get to that stage of acceptance and their needs are met, usually people want to live as long as they can.
Finally, I spoke with former Labour MP Marion Street from the End of Life Choice Society of New Zealand, who submitted a similar bill to David's in 2012 when she was an MP, and I first asked her why she supports assisted dying in Aotearoa.
For me, it's about the kind of society we want, really, and I think we can be more compassionate than we are. It's really that simple for me. I just think people who have been self-determining adults all through their lives have made decisions about their lives since shortly after they were children, should not be treated like children at the end of their lives and have a really important decision taken away from them. And I think it's also about allaying the fears and anxieties people have about bad deaths, because people see loved ones dying badly. Despite any amount of palliative care, there are still bad deaths, and not criminalising people who are doctors who help people end that suffering is a good move, in my view.
And the first reading of the end-of-life bill passed by quite a margin last night. How do you feel about this? Do you think it's promising?
I thought it was fantastic. I was really delighted by the margin. It was about 10 more than I was expecting, which is terrific. But the thing that's good about it for the MPs is that they know they're not going out on a limb. They have a lot of others around them who are either more committed than they are or as committed as they are to hearing facts and evidence about the downstream effects of legislation of this sort in other countries in the world. So, you know, there's a level of comfort there for MPs that they're not striding out into an unknown place on their own, that they've got a lot of people with them, their colleagues with them, and I think that will give some a deal of comfort they mightn't have had before.
And New Zealand First has promised their support only if there's a public referendum. Do you feel there's enough support from the public that this would pass?
Yes, I do. The arrangement, however, is that David Seymour will support New Zealand First's amendment to the legislation that it will be triggered by the results of a referendum. So it doesn't mean that there will be a referendum yet. That will have to be decided by the whole Parliament. But if Parliament wants to adopt New Zealand First's position, then it will do so. Very, very like the way we had a referendum on MMP all those years ago. We had two referenda, but the second one was the one that triggered the legislation into effect. And so they can go ahead and pass the legislation, but wait for a referendum for it to become effective. So I'm not afraid of a referendum. I think every poll of any repute has about 75% of people in favour of this. So I imagine if this, particularly a referendum, was tied to a general election, that there wouldn't be any problem in getting it passed without it.
Speaking of safeguards, some critics say that it could result possibly in vulnerable people being coerced into ending their life. Do you feel this is a legitimate concern?
No, I don't. Not at all. I think there are sufficient safeguards in David's bill that will... there are sufficient safeguards in David's bill to allow for people to check on whether or not anybody is being coerced, and that is a really important provision. It was in my bill before and David Seymour's bill now, so it's something that I think there is sufficient coverage of in the legislation.
And is assisted dying happening anyway in New Zealand? Are doctors giving people medication that they know will end their life sooner?
I think it is certainly happening, maybe not with the intention of ending life, with the intention of relieving suffering, but in the knowledge that it could end life. And that is a kind of double jeopardy that doctors have. They can say, we administered this huge dose of morphine to relieve suffering, but we knew it would kill him. But their intention was to relieve suffering, therefore they are excluded from criminal liability in under the law. So this would simply make the regulated environment easier for doctors to work in. So at the moment, they work in that environment. Some of them do administer lethal doses without regulation, without any safeguards, without any consultation, without any 7 days for the patient to consider whether they want it or not, without, you know, all of those safeguards that are built in. The doctors are doing it now in an unregulated way, and I think as a society we should regulate that environment for them so that they are protected.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.